She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. And trust me when I say we are going to give you plenty to think about today. Thank you so much for joining us. This show is sponsored by the Fairfax Companies, and I just want to remind everybody that their dedication to improving the environment through creative and innovative business practices is why they are the leader in business of sustainability. I thank them every chance I get for their support of the Mrs. Green's World vision and mission. We have quite a special show today and two very special guests joining me in studio. They are thought leaders of the most magnificent kind. They are creating change in the way people think about money in the most creative ways that you will be able to get your head around. They're creating a buzz. It's my pleasure to welcome them both. Bernard, I was saying it Latir, but it's Liatir.
No, Liatar.
Liatar. See, I practice, and I said, you know, I'm not nervous, but this is a vast subject, so there's a lot going on in there. Liatar. Bernard is an international expert in the design and implementation of currency systems. He co-designed and implemented the convergence mechanism to the single European currency system, which we all know as the euro, and served as president of the electronic payment system at the National Bank of Belgium. Among his many accomplishments, I could make the show about reading both of your bios. He studied and worked in the field of money for more than 30 years and in an unusually broad range of capacities, including as a central banker, a fund manager, a university professor, and a consultant to governments in numerous currencies, countries, multinational corporations, and community organizations. Jackie Dunn, such easy, nice last name, Jackie, is an award-winning journalist from Ireland, founder and CEO of Danu Resource, and an emerging leader in helping entrepreneurs develop technologies and initiatives that restore the Earth's equilibrium globally. Their company serves as a fiscal agent for funding and works as the interface between the donors and projects. Danu's unique value is its ability to work from a future reference point that draws out the greatness and builds on the strengths of both the donor and the recipient. Both of these people are new thought, new paradigm thinkers. And when I was preparing for the show, they got here and I said to them, I'm not nervous. I am just so excited about the being overwhelmed by the vastness of this concept. So I want to make a few brief announcements. Welcome to both of you, and then we'll get on the show and it'll be all about you. Mrs. Green's World is a proud member of Dream Vision 7 Radio and Castle Rock Radio Networks, where my shows can be heard weekly. Please visit my website at mrsgreensworld.com for weekly broadcast times and links to their websites. We are here every Saturday live at noon Arizona time. We invite you to join us each week. Of course we do. And you can listen on your iPhone or Droid. I was in LA this weekend and listened to my own show on my phone, and that was kind of fun. All the podcasts from the show are on my website forever, right there for your listening pleasure. If you have questions, please connect with me, info@mrsgreensworld.com. And to stay connected on information like these two great guests, connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, or Instagram, or whatever way it is you connect with the social media world. We are 1 week into our Pin It to Win It contest on Pinterest for Earth Month, and we would like to know what on earth moves you. We put a lot of thought into this. It's not just a fun hobby. If you're a pinner, please check it out. And even if you're not, this might make you become one. Just visit my website for details. And the quick shout out for one of our national sponsors, Echo Bella. This company is an outstanding example of the triple bottom line in action. I've been getting a lot of great feedback from people who are actually using their products. I encourage you to check them out. They are sustainable. They are fair trade. They are sourced in the best possible way. visit their website at ecobella.com with two C's, and I believe you'll like what you see. I just got some great feedback this week from people who have emailed me about the purity of their products. If you use the code Mrs. Green, you will get 10% off, and who doesn't like that? Speaking of currency. Now let's get started because there is so much to share. Again, two very special guests, Bernard Leiter, an international expert in the design and implementation of currency systems, and Jackie Dunn, an award-winning journalist from Ireland, founder and CEO of Danu Resource. Let's get started. And we can start with the end in mind if we want. We talked about it. I think there's two things that we should start by covering. One is the overall concept of your book for rethinking money. I mean, money touches everyone, no matter how poor, no matter how wealthy, no matter how big or large the country or the locality. It's very important to all of our lives. And rethinking it, to me, is increasingly more important given the collapse of all the financial institutions on just about a daily basis. So can we start with the impetus behind your coming together to write the book and the underpinnings of the message, the big picture? You want to start, Jackie?
Yeah, I think the reason for writing this book was I was so impressed with stories of very ordinary people like you and me and our listeners here today that have no background in economics, you know, probably don't have much education even, how they came together with their communities and said, we have problems. And what can we do ourselves to resolve our own issues? And the book chronicles these extraordinary people, very ordinary but extraordinary, doing extraordinary things and addressing problems. So maybe we can give you some idea of some of the stories. You
know, I think that's a great way. That's what people relate to, yeah, is a story.
Yeah, and I think how I met Bernard was actually listening to him about a decade ago telling this story, which in that moment, the light bulb went off for me and I could understand for the first time how there could be sustainable abundance. Which seems like an oxymoron, but we'll explain how that is possible. But let me start off with this story.
Love that concept, though, sustainable abundance.
Yeah. So anyway, this is the story I heard Bernard say, so I'm going to tell his story, which is, it starts off in a town called Curitiba, Brazil, which is in southeast Brazil. And the mayor of the town at the time was a guy called Jaime Lerner and had a huge problem. There's been a huge influx of people around the city and a number of favelas, shanty towns had grown up, who had a terrible garbage problem. The trouble is that Jaime Lerner had no money to resolve the garbage problem. And does that sound familiar? I mean, yeah.
Yes, globally.
Globally, yeah. So anyway, he couldn't go anywhere for a loan, couldn't go to the central bank. You know, he had to resolve the problem itself. And you can imagine with garbage, you know, there's disease, there's rats, you know, I mean, pretty disgusting.
And it keeps on coming.
And it does. So, yes, exactly. So anyway, he realized that he had a bus service that was being underutilized. These buses were running half empty or the quarters empty. They were running anyhow because they were getting paid per mile or kilometer in this case. So anyway, so he sent out a decree, as it were, to the favelas for all the children who came in with a bag of garbage that was sorted between glass, paper, and cans, I suppose, and put them into big vats that were colored-coded. The kids would get a token to ride on the buses. So within 6 weeks, or less than in a matter of weeks, the favelas were picked clean. And these kids had all these tokens to ride on the buses, which they gave to their parents. And then local farmers started accepting these bus tokens in payment for local produce. Cutting a long story short, in a matter of about 6 years or so, this developing city had several different currencies. That was just one example. And they had a standard of living that was a third higher than any other Brazilian living anywhere else in Brazil. So, and they did marvelous things for their city. I mean, it was then given an award for being the most ecologically sound city in the developing world. And they now have one of the best transport systems. And they've just done remarkable stuff. And you can see a beautiful botanical garden they have where once the city dump was. I mean, just incredible. And one of my favorite photographs is one of a fisherman's trawler laden with bags of garbage, because days when the fish aren't biting, they actually trawl for garbage and they bring the garbage in. Now, if that isn't blessedly brilliant, I don't know what is.
If that doesn't take Mrs. Green's breath away regarding our oceans, nothing will. It is a magnificent way to start.
Yeah, so he designed a currency. There was an unused resource and there was an unmet need. The unused resource was the capacity of the buses. There was this need to clean up the favelas. And lo and behold, the token, which could have been a paper token, but in this case was a bus token, became a currency.
And it really is a simple concept that people can grasp. And he didn't need a big, huge oversight committee and a long-term study. He just got into action. Now, Bernard, Jackie inspired you to... You inspired Jackie to get started. She heard you, and then there was this path that unfolded that we now know is one of the results is rethinking money. What inspired you? What made you see that there is hope? Because when you started, things weren't as bad as they are now in terms of literally markets collapsing. I mean, to me, it continues to get worse, or the reporting about it continues to be much more instantaneous. So what was at the core of your inspiration saying, folks, we got to change things or we're headed for collapse and disaster?
The trigger was actually a person. The only mentor I ever had in my life was Willis Harmon, who with the astronaut Wichel has started the Institute of Noetic Sciences back 30 years ago. And he had contacted me and told me, Bernard, you have been trained for 25 years at the time to understand money like nobody ever had. You need to write down what you learned. I thought about it, decided to do it. And that's, I thought I would spend 3 years on doing that. This is now 15 years ago.
And you're still going at it so passionately. So, my hat's off to you.
So what happened is that the first book on that topic was called The Future of Money, and I described the situation we're in today. My claim was that we have a convergence of four megatrends that will force us to rethink money before 2020. One of them is the aging of society, which will have a huge financial burden on the state. The second one is joblessness. The third one is climate change and species extinction. And fourth one is monetary instability. And I said then that that's where we will be before 2020. And we're going to have to force us to rethink it. So what Jackie has done is... provide a version that is actually, with a lot of interviews, a lot of stories, less technical, fortunately, and therefore more accessible for the general public. And I'm very grateful for her for having made that effort.
A true partnership and collaboration. I mean, it's really, you can tell just by meeting the both of you, what a wonderful combination of skills and knowledge and expertise. What I want to go back just a little bit as to what's wrong. Like, I feel, and it may be erroneously thinking, that our country financial system is just based on debt. I mean, we're building, we have a house of cards, there's, you know, gold somewhere, ha-ha. And how did it get so bad? And it just keeps getting worse. So I feel very proud and happy to be in America and very frightened, admittedly, that we are literally a country that's built on a house of cards financially.
It's not just America that's built on a house of cards. It's global.
All countries have been using the same system. By the way, let's first say that it has provided positive things, the old system. We claim that the Industrial Revolution wouldn't have been possible without that kind of system. And there have been positive features from the Industrial Revolution. Now we can start seeing the consequences, the degradation of the environment and all the other stuff. But definitely it has changed our standard of living in a good deal of humanity in a level that only royalty could think about in the past. Now, that system is out of date. The core of it is it's a system that... Well, most people don't even understand how money is created, but fundamentally, every dollar you've seen is someone's debt. It can be governmental debt, corporate debt, individual debt. Money is created when banks lend money. And of course, that means there's also interest built in. And that feature creates a number of features, aspects, consequences of that system that we consider normal, that we kind of consider, accept as a given. And it doesn't have to be. This is just one kind of money that's possible. And that has provoked, for example, competition between all the users. There's definitely competition built into conventional money. The trap is that we are told, among others in economic theory, that money is value neutral. It's just a passive medium of exchange that makes it possible to make more efficient exchange than otherwise would be possible. That's the idea. It's not true. This is definitely a system that has specific values embedded in it. One of them is competition. And the reason for that is that when a bank creates money by lending it into existence, it creates only the principal. So when you pay interest, you use someone else's principal. So we're always competing with each other for money in order to pay the interest that were never created.
And I think what is truly tragic, just to add to Bernard's thought there, is that bankruptcy is part and parcel of the system.
It is necessary.
It's necessary.
And people start, like we started our lives, on that you buy a house, yep, and that's a mortgage, and mm-hmm, you borrow the money, and you buy a car, and you borrow money, mm-hmm, and you're paying interest. Mm-hmm. And it's if as young married couples, we had started out with owning a house instead of having a mortgage on a house. I mean, ostensibly we were buying a house.
Yes.
And it's a currency then that what we do is feed the bank, feed the bank, feed the bank. And then, yet on the other hand, when you increase value in a house, which in back in my day was a great investment, it's how we started our first business. So there again, it was like taking the money. The house was not yet paid for, but the value had increased, so we could borrow, take the money out of that and use it to start a business. So mm-hmm, that's the positive impact you have talked about. But I want to ask you this while you were talking, Bernard and Jackie. I'd love you both to answer this. At what point in our culture, because you do talk about this, did money become equated erroneously with happiness? Money does not really, people think if they had more money, they'd be happy. All of the scientific research proves the contrary. I went to the Happy Show in LA this past week, and this man spent 10 years studying happiness. And there are bodies of research that say at about $80,000 for this country, people, if they give $100 million, $200 million, they're no happier than when their basic needs are met. So can you both respond to that?
Well, it's a big one to respond to because there's so many layers.
You guys have big ones to respond to.
It really is. I think one of the problems about money does not, the system we have today, not only does not work for the poor, it also is not working for the super rich. And I think people will find that absolutely shocking.
I agree.
The work of our mutual friend Bernice Hill, for example, is a classic example. Perhaps you'd like to add
yes,
in.
Yeah. There is, if you are known to have money, the scarcest thing you will have in your life is trust. You can't trust society because when you're invited for something, is you or is it a checkbook that's invited? You don't know whether you have friends. Are your friends going to be friends if you didn't have the money? You can't trust the family. Oh, well, my elder brother's getting very close to granddaddy. What will that mean? And finally, you don't trust yourself. It's an enormous, I call it the sacred wound.
It's a burden.
Of money.
Yeah.
So, and on the, of course, the other side, where most people can much more easily identify with, is when you don't have enough money in our society, it's really hell. You know, if you can't have enough money to support yourself.
The whole scarcity mindset, and yeah, then fear overcomes and shuts down, so it becomes, I don't have enough, but nobody's really sure what enough is.
And then there's also fear on the very wealthy side as well, which is this trust, fearful situation that people
losing
get into. I mean, how many very wealthy people do you and I know that are afraid to spend money? Because they're afraid they're going to lose it, and then what are they going to do?
and they're going to die without it. But yeah. My philosophy is you can't take it with you. So, like, let's go. Don't leave it for the kids. Let's have fun with the kids while we're still here. It's a very different concept. But even me, yeah. it's like, do we have enough? And what is enough? And yeah. the media injects consistent fear of running out, scarcity, lack, and all that. Yes. So we are getting the sign for taking a quick break. I am so thrilled to be interviewing in studio with us today, Bernard. If I don't say your name right, you just have to come over across the table and slap me because I did practice it. Liatir? How's that?
Leotard.
Leotard. What's
Think
wrong with
Think about the leotard.
Thing? Leotard.
Without
there
the
you
D.
Go. Leotard. And you know what I was saying? I was saying Bernard Letier. Leotard. I got it. I will not say the D. And Jackie Dunn, who are talking to us about Rethinking Money, which is the name of their book. It's really totally new paradigm, exciting thought shifts for the future, and we are going to give you lots to think about. You are listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, and when we come back, let's talk about exactly, let's bring it to the micro level of how it would work in a place like Tucson, Arizona, what kind of experience you're having, and I get the concept of trade, and I want to see how it would work. And of course, we always have to talk about taxes because our system is so based on you make this much money, you place this much in the bank, and then you're taxed on this. And if you're saving, you're taxed on the savings. And if you're investing, you're taxed on that. So I think we have to do it. I'm gonna start calling you Bernard Leotard, but so that we just have some fun with this, because it really matters to me that I say your name right. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. We'll be right back. I'm sure you won't want to miss one single second of this.
Can you predict the future? The reality is we can't, but we can be ready for it. Funded by the National Science Foundation, researchers at the University of Arizona are working on a $3 million project to study the monsoon and learn about our changing desert weather, climate, and ecology. Such knowledge will help guide us to a more sustainable future, not just for our desert, but for the world. Now that's thinking ahead. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
It's got advanced technology. It's got major breakthroughs in technology everywhere you look. It's the 2013 Honda Accord. Hi there, this is Mrs. Green, and I want to share with you that after nearly 40 years of heritage, this is the most stunning Accord ever. The highly respected Automotive Magazine raves that the 2013 Honda Accord offers unparalleled talent of goodness. Please visit Chapman Honda at 4646 East 22nd Street in Tucson to check it out and see for yourself.
You can always find things around the house to give to Goodwill, but I have a bigger reason to give. A while back, I lost my job and I couldn't even support my family. A lot of people don't know Goodwill can help you find a job, but that's what they did for me. I've had this job for 7 years and I love going to work. You know how they say Goodwill changes lives? Well, it's true. Goodwill needs your donations now more than ever. Please donate today.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. Thank you for joining us today, and we are certainly giving you a lot to think about. My in-studio guest today, I am so thrilled to share with you, are Bernard Leotard. Yes! And Jackie Dunn, and they wrote a book called Rethinking Money, and we are really rethinking money. So why don't we start here with Bernard? What is money? What is money?
Let's start with defining the trap that's built into economics when they define money in terms of what it does, but not in terms of what it is. They always say money is a medium of exchange, standard of value, and store of value.
Which is what it does.
And that is what it does. That's not what it is. Now, if we didn't have a word to describe transport, but only horses, nobody would have invented a bicycle or a car, would they? They would have perfected horses forever.
Right.
And that's one of the traps that we're dealing with here. Now, money is an agreement. It lives in the same space as marriage or a political party or a business deal. In other words, it lives in the space. It's only in our head. But that doesn't make it not real. Okay? It's an agreement to use something as a medium of exchange within a particular community. The community can be national, like most national currencies, can be global, like the dollar, since 1945, because it was an agreement, a treaty, or it can be a neighborhood. It can be a bunch of friends. And that is where money is generated, in the space of agreement. Now, what's important with agreements, when an agreement doesn't work for you, you can create a new one.
Right.
And that's what people are doing. People have found that the limitations of the conventional system are important enough, or strong enough, or making them desperate enough to actually get out of the box and do something about it.
They're failing them.
And yes, the conventional system has been failing millions and millions of people in America and everywhere else in the world. And it has been doing it repeatedly. This is not the first time.
Yeah, the IMF has reported, the IMF itself over the last 30 years is 125 different types of crashes, between monetary crashes, the actual system itself failing like is in the Russian ruble or the Argentinian peso, for example. Yeah, then you have a sovereign debt crisis like what Greece is going through at the moment.
Which impacted every global market. Teeny tiny little one island.
Yeah.
And what did it do? I mean, you talk about global impact.
Absolutely.
I'm like, what?
And then we have the actual, you know, banking crashes. And look what we experienced here in the United States, 2007, 2008. So these are repetitive. So, you know, if this was a car, you know, you would actually send it back to the garage and call it a total lemon. You know,
if it was a bank, is there anywhere we can send that back to? Because that's a really great concept. We just keep having bigger fish eat the little fish. So we have bigger banks, mm-hmm. which weren't working in the first place. I'm not sure about that one. It's like, why are we having bigger banks? And when the little ones...
Yeah, but the interesting thing is, you know, getting back to ingenuity again, there's an amazing confluence cheaper computing, access to the internet and social media. So information about improvements are just going viral. So like banking now is actually on your mobile phone.
Right.
And some of the projects that Bernard is involved in, for example, I mean, it's all been done on a mobile phone, bypassing, you know, the usual brick and mortar banks.
And not using paper.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's now possible to have an electronic wallet on your mobile phone where you have a number of currencies, not only different national currencies, but also different complementary or local currencies. So you can design these puppies, you know, to do whatever you want. Like you can design a currency as, for example, the Berkshires, try and say that one quickly, in in Massachusetts, for example, that encourages people to shop locally. And like you were mentioning Tucson, to actually have a currency that incentivizes people to shop and support local services and products would be utterly wonderful. Because that's one of the reasons why, you know, regions are poor. Because if you throw $1 million in the morning in the middle of Tucson, or it could be, you know, downtown Santa Barbara or Boston in the morning, that money is out of that community in a matter of hours, because it can be used all over America and even abroad.
Right.
So to design a currency that's specifically designed to stay within the community and circulate in that community gets jobs going, creates business. And that's what we need, is that focus to revitalize our neighborhoods, our cities. But, you know, a community can be defined in a number of different ways. It could be a business-to-business currency. It could be a currency for old people that are in retirement homes, or a collection of older people, currencies to incentivize new learning systems. I mean, you name it, it is possible to create a currency.
I think it's important to talk about, I mean, this is what's called the contemporary currency. And what I like about that, as opposed to local currency, is that you're right. It didn't have to be, it wouldn't have to be one thing that's replicating our dollar only on a local level. How does it begin? I think we need to talk about that a little bit. So we use the micro level of, we are in Tucson, mm-hmm. and we have a bus system that doesn't have a lot of people on the bus, and we want to get people to, more people to ride the bus, and they can get a free bus pass if they went and volunteered in a school for 2 hours. They would earn local currency mm-hmm. dollars by the city. Is that a good way to describe how it can start?
That's a start.
That's one way. That's what happened in Curitiba. If the city wants certain things to be done, you can pay the people in bus tokens. Now, there is other systems as well. I mean, one of the problems in Tucson is, like in the rest of America, is employment.
Right.
Employment is invariably a problem for small and medium-sized businesses. The solution that's usually talked about, we need to attract a big company, it will create 5,000 jobs. Well, the better solution is to have 5,000 small businesses hire one person.
Yes.
And that can be done by creating a complementary currency intra-business, between businesses, that actually provides liquidity to exchange between them. This is perfectly legal. It has been done 80 years ago in Switzerland. The reason for the stability of employment and the robustness of the economy in Switzerland has been proven to be related to that second currency. This is, it's called the WIR, W-I-R, and now 70,000 businesses in Switzerland are using this.
I think the story about how this came about is actually very, very amusing. There were 17 businessmen who woke up one morning because they got a letter from their bank and saying their credit lines had been cut or curtailed. Sounds familiar? So they got together with sort of their heads in their hands and saying, what are we going to do? And they said, well, we actually trade with one another. We're actually, you know, I buy from you and I sell to you. So they realized they were all going to the bank to borrow money in order to pay one another. So they created this currency, as Bernard just mentioned, called the WIR.
Of how to pay each other. Now, what is it predicated on? Let's suppose that I love it, which of course I do. And I'm going to decide now I'm going to earn some local currency that I can use to buy groceries. How does it work when you come up against like a national chain, like a Safeway? How much of it is predicated on buy-in from the local providers of things that are necessities like food? And could I pay my city water bill? I mean, I'm jumping, but it's really what comes to mind. Well, I get it. If I provide a commercial for, you know, for Ecobella, they do a trade with me for products. Mm-hmm. That's to me is really a concept of
that's
local.
Barter.
That's barter.
That's barter. Mm-hmm. So then take it to the next level of the local currency.
Make an agreement within your community of small businesses to accept electronic bits, which you call whatever you want to call it, let's call them Tucsonites, or whatever you want to do. And that is a system that the software exists already. It's what we call technically a mutual credit.
Like contemporary I sell you something. Debit card, a contemporary
I sell you something. Okay. I have a credit, you have a debit. Now, if you were doing something for me in exchange, that would be barter. However, my credit, I can buy something from Jackie, and you can sell something to another business in town to compensate for your debit. We've created a currency between the four of us. As long as you pay your taxes, and in America, taxes payable in dollars, this is perfectly legal. But it creates liquidity between yourselves.
And it's that's not paying interest, which we have to keep talking about. That's like such a critical part of what can kill a company, a business, destroy mm-hmm. a family. Students have to pay student loans for 30 years after they get out of college because they're paying interest. I mean, it's devastating to people.
There's a couple of thoughts here. One is these complementary currencies do not replace national money. They're called complementary because they work in tandem. There are things that you can never possibly buy using a local currency. Like, you know, if you're going, you mentioned Safeway, for example, which is a supermarket chain. I mean, that's a dollar environment because they brought materials and goods from outside.
Right.
But locally, artisan produce and products, for example, that could be paid for in a Tucson currency or a blend of currencies where you pay part of it. Like I could have a painter come in to paint the studio, for example. You would pay for his paints and his brushes in dollars, but you could pay for his time in the local currency. So that would be an example of a blended transaction. But it would be possible to get that painter in because, you know, you're not depleting your dollar budget.
I can even see it for when you talk big picture. An example that I go to, we opened a big, huge, new, cutting edge, you got all the bells and whistles, Whole Foods Market. They have 36 locally suppliers. Sourced. So if they were willing, because they are really new paradigm thinkers, there could be an opportunity to even have a grocery store mm-hmm. where I'm supplying you with these tomatoes mm-hmm. and I'm getting the local trade, the contemporary currency back. So it could it could be a hybrid. Love that word.
Mm-hmm. There's a prototype for that, what they're describing in Ithaca for now 30 years. There is a currency called the Ithaca Hour. And the supermarket in town, which is supplying exactly as your Whole Foods Market here, is also tied in with the local suppliers. They accept the currency. The best restaurant in town accepts the currency. All the movie houses accept the currency. So you can have a mechanism whereby you activate intra-business activity that otherwise wouldn't exist.
You filled in a big missing piece for me, which was it's never going to replace the dollar ultimately, but it can be huge in creating sustainable communities mm-hmm. locally, which is where it all begins. Mm-hmm. That's what makes the wheels on our national bus go round and round is small businesses.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's what's very interesting, I think, for you, Gina, and for the listeners, is to know that until and unless we rethink our current system, we cannot have sustainability, either sustainability of the actual monetary system itself or ecological sustainability. It's impossible because of the issue of interest, because all national currencies carry a positive interest rate, which has devastating effects on society, which we go into in the book, for example, such as the concentration of wealth. Interest is unwittingly, and we're sort of unconscious about this, sucks money and concentrated with the top 10% of the population who have all the money. So it's an so people getting really angry at very, very wealthy people, you know, they're greedy. Well, maybe or maybe they're not, they are. But the fact is money, the system we have concentrates wealth.
Which is out of whack.
So out of whack and has devastating consequences for all of us. It, for example, creates short-term thinking, Bernard.
Yes.
And you've done a lot of thinking about this.
Yes, the consequences of the system is exactly the problems that we're living today. I mean, the ecological crisis, all the problems that are not solved today are automatically being generated by the motivation system that is driven by the conventional money. And it's short-term thinking. It is not sustainable in any...
It's not working.
It's not working, and it's certainly not working for the ordinary people. So there is actually... an interesting historical perspective on this. If you put in one box all patriarchal societies in history, Sumer, Babylon, Greece, Rome, and since the Renaissance, the Western society, all these societies have in common to use a single currency, centrally issued with interest. Interest was invented in Sumer at the beginning of patriarchy. If you look in another box, where all the matrifocal societies that honor feminine values, you always have an ecology of currencies. You have one currency which is identical to the patriarchal one to trade the people you don't know. But they have a second set of currencies, bottom-up, which is actually created by the people themselves that actually feed their own community, local community. That is the evolution that we are now seeing. There's a rebalancing necessary between masculine values and a monopoly of domination of masculine values and a new balance between masculine and feminine values. And I'm talking masculine and feminine, not man and women.
I get it. And a rebalancing.
Yeah.
And a rebalancing.
Not flipping.
And it's not flipping. We're not talking now of a matriarchy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And we describe this in the book as cooperative currencies and competitive currencies, and we have a highly competitive situation, and we need this growth of cooperative currencies in order to bring our society into balance. And one other last thing I'd like to say about interest is it does cause the erosion of social capital.
The societies that are the most advanced, quote-unquote, in development are also the ones that have the biggest crisis in community. The pockets in America where there's still community are the ghettos, where people don't have money.
Right, right.
So it's...
Yeah.
And there's a lot of happiness and joy. I mean, in the ghettos, even with the harshness and the hard... You know, the challenges that they face, there is a happiness factor there in the sense of community and rebuilding and all kinds of wonderful things that I read about, even in terms of sustainability and the more environmental issues where people within the neighborhoods are creating massive change, which is where it has to begin, in the neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so when we come back, we're going to run out of time. Of course, I knew that, but I'd love to talk about some cities and states. When I did the research, it looks like there are 16 states that are considering a state currency, and how your view is about some local communities adapting. Are there ones that we can look at? Because, I mean, I have hope for Tucson. And we're going to end with, I know both of you are filled with hope. You are passionately embracing this. You're connecting with other people locally and globally that are passionately embracing it. And I said to you off air, my being is about hope, possibility, and change. And this is an exciting concept. So everybody, we are going to take another short break. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. Always want to encourage you to follow me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, because then you will find out about great guests like I am interviewing today, Bernard Leotar and Jackie Dunn. And we are talking about rethinking money, which is a totally new thought concept. Please stay here with me, and we'll have more exciting things to talk about in terms of rethinking money. We can't forget to talk about taxes, because I know that has to come up. Please stay here with me.
She's the most exciting thing that's ever happened to you, and you want to spend eternity with her. She deserves nothing less than the best, an Abbott Taylor original. A diamond engagement ring as exceptional as she is that will make her eyes sparkle every time she sees it. Because we design and make our own jewelry, we can create something wonderful for every budget. I'm Abbott Taylor. I'd like to invite you to come see what Abbott Taylor Jewelers has waiting for you. With 35 years and thousands of original jewelry designs, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. We're proud to say, using recycled gold, we have saved over 100 million pounds of toxic waste from this planet. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook, and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green. The 2013 VW Jetta TDI is the sedan people love to love. It comes with a zippy turbocharged diesel engine that's 90% cleaner burning than previous diesel engines, and it goes farther on a tank of gas than a Toyota Prius. Chapman Volkswagen has a great selection of Jetta TDIs, so choose yours today at chapmantucson.com or in person at 4646 East 22nd Street in Tucson.
Can academic research really save the planet? This year, the University of Arizona took full ownership of Biosphere 2. With 5 ecosystems enclosed in over 7 million cubic feet of sealed glass, Biosphere 2 is a premier facility for environmental research, where the top minds in the world will come together to address some of humanity's greatest challenges, such as climate change. Now that's using your brains. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Habitat for Humanity's Havistar is changing the world. By selling new and used building and home improvement materials to the public, the Havistar is diverting more than 250 tons from the landfill each year. To donate, call 520-889-7200. Stop by and shop today. The Habit Store is located at 935 West Grant Road. Proceeds from all the sales go to Habitat for Humanity Tucson. For more information, go to habitattucson.org or call 520-889-7200.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And if you're not thinking today about rethinking money, wake up. It's time to rethink the whole concept of money. To me, one of the things I read is that it doesn't sound really upbeat, but that we really are on a path to global self-destruction if we don't change things in a hurry. What I love about your message and about rethinking money is that yours is a world filled with hope, possibility, and change. Using contemporary currencies with, it, in the case of the United States, the dollar, and building true sustainable communities. You brought up in the other segment about the balance of the patriarchal versus matriarchal societies, which I, of course, believe is happening and will be healthier for everyone. So let's talk. Can we start talking about, I think it has to come up in many conversations, a lot of the government services that we enjoy for the fire department and the police department and the schools are funded by tax money, which cracks me up because most cities are really operating in huge deficits. So what money is exactly keeping those doors open is borrowed, which is your point. So what about taxes? How does a global contemporary currency or contemporary currency locally help with getting those things to happen, keeping the doors open for schools?
And there's two thoughts here. One is the tax issue. Currently, one of the most popular complementary currencies in the United States is something called time banking, which is for every hour I get a time dollar.
Right.
Yeah. The IRS have ruled that these systems are tax exempt. There's three rulings. Because they're doing jobs of social purpose, they're addressing social needs that would take tax dollars in order to address.
Right, right.
So if you're operating in a time banking environment, you're tax exempt. And there are 400 of these, as I said earlier, around the country, with one to two new systems operating or opening up every single week. And there's one here in Tucson. Bernard has made this point before that the reason why the dollar has such supremacy, or the euro has such supremacy, whatever national currency has supremacy, and why we all want it, is we've got to pay our taxes in it. It would be very, very interesting if local governments, in order to keep their doors open on their fire departments and all the services that they offer, would accept payment, maybe partial payment or maybe full payment, for what they need in a local currency.
Even a currency that they issue themselves.
Right.
Right.
So the city could issue the currency.
The city could issue a currency paying partially, not 100%,
right,
obviously,
right,
partially certain of the functions that are necessary, and require a contribution from citizens in that town in that particular currency. Because the systemic purpose for taxes is not that that will pay for the government's activities. It is actually to give value to a currency that otherwise wouldn't have any. If the government did not require everybody to pay taxes exclusively in dollars, nobody would bother using the money created by bank debt.
And when you talk about it, the synapses start going off for me, because a bus driver could donate time at a public library and go help with a city cleanup, and all of that would turn into the currency, the contemporary currency that he could then go and buy at a locally owned grocery store, get his hair cut,
exactly,
go to the movies.
Exactly.
And you can have, if you have a citizen in that town and you need to contribute, say, 20 units of that time currency issued by the city government, if you don't want to do anything, that's fine. But then you have to buy them from someone else who did do it. So you can actually create a mechanism whereby the people would fund people who do more of their civil activity than is required and have them generate an income for doing that. In dollars.
In dollars.
Yeah. So, but I think the fascinating thing is not all local currencies are convertible into dollars. There are currencies that do a circuit in its own orbit, as it were. I mean, you can have an educational currency that's never convertible, and you don't want everything convertible back into dollars.
Right.
You know, and it's important. But in, for example, time banking, you're not able to convert those time dollars into regular dollars. That would cause a conflict and some problems. So, what we're talking about is having a toolbox, a monetary toolbox. If you think of the dollar as a hammer or a euro as a hammer, it's fantastic for hammering in that nail into that wall over there. But we need the monetary equivalents of paintbrushes, because you can't paint a room with a hammer, a screwdriver, a Phillips head, a saw. So communities are coming together, and with that specificity can design a currency to address elderly care, for example, to address education, to address ecological issues. So you have a toolbox, a monetary toolbox of different currencies with different circuits that provide the equilibrium and the support for everything we want to do in this world. There is no reason why anybody should go hungry. There is no reason that nobody should not have a roof over their head. There's no reason why anybody should go uneducated. We're human. We've got capacities.
There's infinite supply.
There's infinite supply. And what we're waiting for is a piece of paper.
The student loan,
yeah,
or something.
Or something. We're waiting for a piece of paper, you know, which is a dollar, you know, which basically, you know, it's a bit and a byte on a computer somewhere. We're waiting for those to turn up for us to do anything. And what we're saying to communities,
it's how we're programmed.
Yeah, I mean, we've got to get out of that mind.
Reprogram the synapses.
Yeah, exactly.
Bernard, when you have such a vast experience in working with banks, I mean, traditional banking institutions and international global currencies, are the banks scared of this concept, or do they embrace it, or is there no broad stroke? Some banks are thinking it's great. Or are they saying, we just don't even want to have these people on any radio show? What are the banks saying?
The bigger banks like the status quo, because obviously it works for them.
They make more money.
However, the smaller banks and the local banks and the regional banks are actually embracing this.
Wonderful.
In Germany, we have the Chiemgauer accepted in 3 local banks. In America, the Ithaca Hour account that we mentioned earlier are held in the Ithaca Bank, not at Citibank across the street, because they are not interested. So this is actually a mechanism for the smaller local bank and community banks to support and attract additional dollars by opening an account in your local currency and helping that process. That's also where you're going to deposit your dollars. So it's a competitive advantage for them. And otherwise, they just disappear. It's as simple as that. They won't have a role in the future.
They won't. They'll get eaten up by a bigger bank.
That's already happening.
And it's really exciting to me, because the concept is, if the bankers, the big global thought leaders, were in the banking area, were conscious, this creates a healthier environment for them too. I mean, the more that you create stronger local communities, and, you know, just go on the local piece for a minute. I'm a big believer in Local First, and I'm a member of Local First. And what people don't think about, it's not just about you know the guy who owns the camera shop. It's that when he needs a sign, he's going to go to the person that owns a sign company that's 4 doors down, and he's also going to use a local bookkeeper instead of these massive companies that outsource it. And like you said, throw the $1 million in the community, and how many seconds does it take before it's gone? Because it's all been eaten up. So it builds on that local first concept. So let's talk about both of you are passionately dedicated to this. You are on a whirlwind tour constantly. I don't know when you're not on a whirlwind tour. I just know about your tour in Tucson.
Yeah, it's week 7.
It's week 7.
On the road, yeah. We've been across the United States twice already. And we were sort of laughing this morning about our suitcases. You know, we didn't really pack for Tucson. We were basically, because most of the cities we're in were in winter still, so we're sort of laughing at our wardrobe here.
Saying, okay, really, I didn't bring a short sleeve shirt. Welcome to summer in Tucson. I know, it was, 91 last week? I was so glad to have a break to go to L.A.
Yeah.
Because it was not 91. I'm like, okay, enjoy that sweater. It's the last time we'll need it. Until maybe October. So there's that. That's a great sacrifice.
No, it's
passion.
Not. No. This is not sacrifice. This has been extraordinary, because there's a new, deeper listening And we're so incredibly touched by seeing somebody light up. And they said, oh, my God, my daughter who's sitting at home depressed tonight has hope. Can I buy 2 copies of this book, and one for me, one for my daughter? This is a true story in Portland. And my daughter will have hope. And I think that's, and it's not ungrounded hope. This is real.
It fuels your fire.
It fuels a fire. And it's real, you know. And I'm so excited about the younger generation. I'm excited by all generations, but particularly the younger generation that are so savvy in all the Facebook and social media stuff. They get it. And what really was going to be interesting to see what happens here in the United States over the next couple of years, as people understand that it's possible to link their unused resources and their unmet needs and tie them with the currency and with their ability to imagine and imagine the world they want for themselves and for their future generations. And from that future standpoint, bring that into the present. It is going to be awesome to see what people are coming up with. We're just bringing the message. We're just telling other people's stories. I mean, ordinary people and extraordinary things that they have done. What's fueling us is the excitement of seeing, you know, the light switch go on and anticipating coming back to places like Tucson, Santa Barbara, you know, New York, Portland, Seattle, wherever we've been, and seeing what that community is going to tell us about what they've done.
We are so blessed that you got to come to Tucson. Bernard, talk about the place from which you come in this journey of 7 weeks in suitcases.
Well, I have been struck by the change in listening that Jackie was referring to. I have been talking about this for 15 years. And I've
you
written...
You didn't give up.
Well, I'm a stubborn kind. But the important thing is the penny has dropped. People are now aware that the conventional system just doesn't serve us. It cannot serve us. It is not designed to serve us. Monetary democracy is now possible for the first time. The technology is available. And we have become now aware that democracy, simple democracy, is not possible without monetary democracy. That's where the switch is happening. And I think there's a groundswell, a thirst, an openness, a listening that is different. This country has proven many times in its history it's capable of change. It's capable of taking initiatives. This gives the initiative back to the people, to the ordinary people. They can do something that actually helps themselves and helps their community and build community in the process of doing this. Community that had been eroded systematically by the non-compatibility of the use of a competitive currency in a community environment. Well, have you noticed that when money comes up in a family, that's the end of the family? And the topic is coming up powerfully. That means there's something could be going to break up here. So it's true at all scales. And that is where the switch is. And the switch has already happened. I would say to put the future is with us. It just isn't evenly distributed yet. And it's being distributed as we speak, thanks to programs like yours, Mrs. Green.
That touches me deeply. But when you, and I thank you for that, but you, and when you talk about our fears, and I am certainly a demographic that you described in significant ways, aging population, even though I don't think I'm at all aging, and the environment. I mean, I have to live every day with the hope and the belief that people are waking up about the environment. And what I loved about rethinking money is if people do that, it will help the environment right itself as well.
Exactly.
It's so inextricably bound with that concept. It's not a silo. It's we are an integrated network. So I think that's great. So we are down to 2 minutes. How do people get your book? This show will air after the interview at the Fox. But how do people get your book to start rethinking money? Because it's really important. It's such a significant first step to help give people the tools to understand it.
Well, they can go to the local bookstore in their community and get Rethinking Money.
Great answer.
How new currencies turn scarcity into prosperity. Or they can go online to Amazon.com, of course. And I believe Barnes & Noble will be doing a big promotion for us, too.
Barnes & Noble. So it's great. You're doing the combination of thinking globally, acting locally. So honored to have you both on the show. Thank you so much for what you're doing for all of us on behalf of the planet. And thank you for being a part of Mrs. Green's World. And next week, we have a great guest, another great guest, Jessica Arenella. She's another True Thought leader who has started a movement that's catching on like wildfire, the What You Can Do series. Please plan to be with me and stay connected through Mrs. Green's World Radio Network at mrsgreensworld.com. Make it a great green week.
Thank you, Gina.
Thank you, Gina.